This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show. And hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm excellent. So I am going out of town for forever. Mm-hmm. So next week, we actually have a really interesting interview with Jess Piper, who is going to talk to me about the Fundy baby voice. So you have that to look forward to next week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. But today, there are many stories. Do you want to jump right into this?
Yeah, actually, before we do that, could I just remind everyone, anyone in the Indiana area, I'm going to be in Bloomington on this coming Saturday.
That would be the 23rd of March.
Thank you so much. And we have one extra ticket to Sarah Sherman. Stuart, who emailed, Stuart, I've got one for you. Also, if you don't want to go to the show, Irish Lion at 6 o'clock in Bloomington, Indiana.
Thank
you to Amy for helping figure that out.
Excellent. Let's start with this story coming out of Tennessee, and this is new information this week. The Satanic Temple just filed a federal lawsuit against a school board in Tennessee for violating their rights by discriminating against a proposed after-school Satan club.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and we talked about this particular story several months ago, so let me get you up to speed on what we talked about back then.
Okay.
They were supposed to start an after-school Satan club several months ago in December at Chimney Rock Elementary School in Cordova, Tennessee. It's not too far from Memphis. But over the past several months, what happened is that the Satanic Temple kept getting slighted. And then they're like, now we think you're discriminating against us. And now they feel like they have enough evidence to move forward with a lawsuit. But here's what happened. These after-school Satan clubs, obviously, do not promote Satan, mm-hmm. satanic beliefs, or anything like that. It's like a science club with some cool marketing. That's pretty much what it is. They focus, according to their own paperwork, they focus on free inquiry and rationalism, the scientific basis for what we know, for which we know what we know about the world around us. All well and good. There's only like literally four of these clubs in the nation.
And we've talked about all of them.
And we have. Like in one of them in Pennsylvania, there was opposition to it. The school stopped them from having the club and it led to a lawsuit mm-hmm. that ended with a settlement forcing the district to pay the Satanists over $200,000 in legal fees.
Yikes.
Like it's a dumb idea to fight these things because they only pop up when there's a Christian good news club
right.
also meeting at the elementary school. And when there are parents who want their kids to sign up for it. Mm. So that's what they said they were doing with this one. In fact, back in January, when their official first meeting was supposed to happen, they said the parents of 13 kids have signed permission slips for their kids to attend our club. So they had interest.
Yeah.
And what happened is the New York Times reported about that club's existence and said, we couldn't find any parent who signed a slip willing to be identified on the record. Which I'm like, yeah, of course you're not.
Yeah, they this don't is... get sucked into a lawsuit.
They don't want to be subject to backlash.
They've got a 7-year-old they're chasing around creation.
Right.
They don't have time for this.
Don't have time for it. And the last thing you'd want to do if you're signing up for this is just say, hey, let's put a big target on my back.
Right.
So the thing is, even though they were planning to meet in January, everyone in the community seemed very open about the fact that we want these people to get the hell out of here. And specifically, the school board and district officials held a literal press conference saying, yeah, we don't want these people here.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that included a interim superintendent of the Memphis Shelby County Schools saying, I am duty-bound to uphold board policies, state laws, and the Constitution, but let's not be fooled, she said, quote, let's not be fooled by what we have seen in the past 24 hours, which is an agenda initiated to ensure we cancel all faith-based organizations that partner with our school district.
It's like, I mean, she's kind of right.
She's absolutely
not right. She's a
little
bit right. The after-school Satan club only exists because Christian after-school Satan Christian school clubs exist.
And but
so
her
she's
implication
a tiny
is
bit right.
She's saying you want us to cancel everything. No, The Satanists aren't saying cancel everything.
I want them to cancel everything.
Doesn't matter what you think. You're not involved in this story. The Satanist group is like, no, we just want to do what the Christian club is doing. Yeah. We're not asking you to shut everything down.
Right.
That's an option you have, but we're not asking you to do that. We're just saying, let us meet. By the way, another school board member said the board would explore legal alternatives to, quote, mitigate the situation, which, all right, I don't know what legal options you're looking at, because the answer is, yeah, they can meet.
Don't worry about it for
once. Don't worry about it. It's fine. There's no situation to mitigate. That same board member said, just because a law is the law, we don't have to accept it. Like, yeah, buddy,
you literally
do. Are you sure
that's sort of the definition of what a law is?
Another chair of the school board said she referred to the after-school Satan Club as the, quote, enemy, and said, Satan has no room in this district, which no one cares what you think.
I'm just imagining how
these... And also, they don't believe in Satan. What are you doing?
I'm just imagining how these adults treat the children who are attending this club as, like, just persona non grata. It's like just some 8-year-old's like, Mrs. Miller's mad at me, I think.
No wonder all these parents who said, yeah, my kid can attend the club are like, I don't want my name in the paper about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, of course not. And the last time we talked about this, we talked about what other parents in the district said, what other preachers in the area said, and none of that matters here. But the point is there's backlash against it, including from the people running the district.
Mm.
But anyway, I also find it interesting that the after-school Satan clubs, all of which there are like 4 or 5 of them, they get more attention than the nearly 80,000 good news clubs that exist everywhere, but that's a separate issue.
Right.
So I'm going to come back to that January meeting in a second.
All right.
But when they posted about when the Satanists posted about the club online and they said our upcoming meetings, we have one a month for the rest of the school year, they posted an image on Facebook that showed the meeting dates, also with a stamp that says pending on all 4 of them. Because they're like, we think we're meeting on these dates, but the school hasn't really approved like our registration for it. So I'm going to get to the lawsuit now. This was filed this week by the Freedom From Religion Foundation on behalf of the Satanic Temple in a federal court. And what they're saying is the district has charged the Satanic Temple discriminatory rental and security fees, refused to adequately communicate, and generally treated members of the group as second-class citizens.
Ooh.
And I'm going to run through some of the allegations they make in here because it's wild. Right. I did not know all of this was happening.
And this is against the board and the staff of the school?
Against the school board. Okay. I mean, they're the ones you could sue over something like this. But here are the allegations. One, the district kept the Ask Club's application for space pending for like over a month. They wanted to start in December, but like they went into the system. They said, we'd like to rent this room out. We're an outside group. We have to pay rent.
Right.
That's fine.
Right.
So here's our application. Submit. And then the school has to say, yeah, we see your application. We'll click the approve button on our end. They wouldn't do that. So it stayed pending for a month in December.
Okay.
So even though they wanted to start then,
they
couldn't.
Well, that's Jesus' month, so they couldn't do Satan then.
So that's why the group ended up trying to start in January.
Mm-hmm.
Then the district, the Satanist group said, hey, can you pass out these permission slips to all the kids in the school saying, hey, this group is meeting. Parents, you need to sign a waiver. Like, I approve my kid can come to this after school club.
Mm-hmm.
And this district said, well, we can't do that for outside groups.
Oh.
Which might be a fine policy, except they absolutely did do that for the Good News Club, the Christian club. And by the way, there's no policy, according to the board, there's no policy that says we don't do that for outside groups.
Oh, really?
So that's the problem
here. So this is giving them the benefit of the doubt in a lot of ways.
The Satanists say, pass this out. School board says, we don't do that. And they're like, one, you don't have any rule that says you don't do that.
Yeah.
And two, you do that. Okay. Then they just said, well, we're going to have our meet. If you can't have the meeting in December because you wouldn't approve it, well, we're scheduling in advance for January. Mm. And now the district realizes, okay, they aren't going to stop. So they do approve the meeting in January, which is when we talked about it, which is when all this happened. But the district decided to charge the Satanic Temple $2,045.60 for a special security fee. Because the district said...
We're going to get you.
Yeah. That we need to hire 10 police officers for 4 hours on the day of your meeting for your after-school one-hour meeting. Yeah. 10. There's like, I want to remind you, there were 13 students signed up for this meeting. They need 10 police officers.
What the fuck are they talking about? I'm so sorry. My voice got so high. Yep. I can't control it.
Literally. This is all in the lawsuit.
What the fuck are you saying to me right now?
What are those? One per child with a couple officers. Cops doing double duty, I guess, on those first graders.
Oh, my good gracious.
So the district charged the Satanic Temple.
God, that cured my depression.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you have to pay $2,000 so we could hire cops to look over your science club.
Cops shoot your kids.
Yeah,
it's certainly not helpful if they're getting shot by another party.
And by the way, we're also going to charge you $250 for field lights.
Are they outside in a field?
Nope.
Then what are you saying to me?
Good field question. Lights? So if the Satanists didn't pay this $2,290-some, the district said, well, then you can't meet. By the way, there's no evidence the Good News Club was ever charged for anything like this. They don't have cops at their meetings.
Is fascinating.
Yeah. So the Satanists...
I'm so happy right now.
They wanted to know, like, why do you need the cops? Why do you need field lights? They asked. But ultimately, they did pay the fee.
Fuck you.
Because they're like,
not.
I know you're charging. Like, in their head, they're probably like, we know you're charging this so we go away. Because we'll just say we can't pay the fee so we can't hold the meeting.
They're playing the game.
But we'll play your game. Yeah. So they paid the fee. And at their first meeting on January
10th... Can you imagine the feeling when that board got the check for the $2,500 and like... Fuck.
Yeah, they actually had money? What? At their first meeting, the Satanist said in the lawsuit, we only saw 3 security officers on site, and furthermore, we looked around even after we were done and it was dark outside.
No
there were
lights?
No field lights on.
Field
lights? So interesting.
Like
football
lights? Like
field
you're...
lights.
What the fuck?
I don't know. I guess the thinking is, do you need it for security because we're going to be there when it gets dark outside? But when they went outside after the meeting, they're like, there's no lights on here, so what are you charging us for? Okay, so that's another thing they pointed out in this lawsuit as you're just trying to get rid of us.
Yeah.
Then they were like, we have our January meeting. Well, what about our February, March, April, May meetings? We signed up for those as well. And they just never get approval for any of these meetings, even though they've done all the paperwork in the system.
Right.
So after weeks, I mean, they would put in for these meetings. District doesn't respond. So they send an email like, hey, what's up? How come we haven't been approved yet? They get no response. They're like, hi, we're just following up to our previous follow-up email. You still haven't responded. Can we get a response? No response.
I'm kind of impressed by their ability to
ignore.
Is
yeah, amazing
ignore
by the Satanists.
Although I can really relate to like, oh, I missed 2 emails. Oh God, now it's 20. Well, right. It's all the same.
So after weeks of not replying, the February meeting at the last second, they approved it, but they moved it to a new location.
Outside the school?
No, it's in the school, but it's in a different location,
like
which means
all the
information online that the Satanic Temple had posted now has
was
to be
incorrect.
Revised.
Yeah.
And the Satanists were told all future meetings have to start at 5 o'clock at night, which hardly after school, because they need to, quote, allow time for the student dismissal process.
A 2-hour process?
Apparently.
A 2-hour process to get 200 kids mm-hmm. onto 4 buses?
And then, just before the February meeting occurred, like shortly before it, the start time was changed by the district, forcing the Satanists to, quote, arrange 30 minutes of childcare from 4:30 to 5 o'clock for attendees. Again, the point here is there was no evidence the Good News Club was ever had to make similar adjustments.
They're so transparent.
It's so bad. The district also then...
This is like a sitcom. This is like a sitcom of trying to do a thing, and the dastardly, like, not even a sitcom, like a Disney kids show of, like, we want to do
cartoonishly
this
cartoonishly buffoonish
yeah, and,
adults.
Like, the dastardly adults are trying to get in their way of playing kickball at night, but we're not going to let it happen. Like, this is what
Speaking
it feels like.
Speaking of which,
like.
Bonus episode, we're going to talk about that new Nickelodeon documentary.
Did you watch it?
Oh, it's so good.
Why don't you tell me when you watch things so I can watch the things?
Because it happened, like, 2 nights ago. Uh-huh. I didn't have time.
Like
anyway.
Life.
Then the district, all those meetings they had reserved in the system, when you reserve something in their system to rent a space, you have to pay apparently a $30 insurance fee, and they paid it, but that's non-refundable. The district then canceled all their meetings in the system.
Over the $30.
Did not refund the insurance fee. But then get this. They the Satanists also issued a public records request. We just want to know what you're charging the Good News Club for rentals and all this.
And this is all available under like a FOIA request, right?
Should be. And they're like, so they made the public record request months ago. And they said when we finally got a response about that, the district said, we are, quote, not in possession of any public records documenting anything about the Good News Club meetings and money and all that. The implication here, and it doesn't say this, this is me talking, doesn't sound like the Christians were charged anything to rent out space, or at least they were charged market price and nothing out of the ordinary, and while the Satanists are being price gouged for the same requests.
I don't know. Now this reminds me of like a movie where one person does one tiny thing wrong and then lies a bunch and like escalating lies to get away with that one little thing. And that's the school board right now. They're like, no, 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 you can't because of this. Well, what about this?
Here's a $2,000 charge.
Yeah, exactly.
We're just gonna
throw. And they keep like, just keep throwing shit at the fire and hoping it works.
So here's the bottom line. Since November, this is in the lawsuit. Since November of 2023, this school board has refused to treat the Satanic Temple equal to other groups. They continue to treat the temple as a second-class citizen in an attempt to effectuate an unconstitutional heckler's veto, bowing to internal and community hostility toward the Satanic Temple on the basis of its viewpoint, the content of its speech, and its religious beliefs.
What was the thing you said about the heckling?
Basically, we know the community doesn't want us here. We know that preacher doesn't want us here. We know your school board doesn't want us here. No one cares about your thoughts.
Right. What's your what was the phrasing? I've never heard of it.
Unconstitutional heckler's veto.
Heckler's veto.
You're just bowing down to what the community wants, which is not what you're allowed to do.
Well, to me, heckler's veto is not even necessarily what the community wants. It's like one loud, obnoxious asshole.
Which,
and like,
to be fair,
yeah,
there
okay.
were plenty of them. Yes.
Right.
I mean, the appalling thing, and this is what you're mentioning, is how overt the discrimination by district officials seems to be here. Mm-hmm. The lawsuit documents email after email sent to the district requesting basic information about their reservations. They never got a response. The costs that they had to pay seem to be made up as they go along.
Yeah.
And occasionally, they say in the lawsuit, they were given refunds on some of the things they had to pay money for, but they were never explained. They just magically appear in the account. Like, couple that with the open hostility, and it's like, what the hell's going on? You're not following your own damn rules
here. Well, and I feel like district money is pretty, like, well looked after. So the fact that they're like, oh, here's $500 back, like...
Like, someone on your staff is taking care of the money stuff.
Yeah, what is going...
All the district had to do in any of this is to say, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
And all the problems go away, and honestly, no one's talking about this club beyond, like, maybe one local news article.
Truly.
Instead,
oh my goodness.
The buffoons just keep making it worse. The Freedom from Religion Foundation summarized it this way. The district has abruptly changed the meeting time, unceremoniously canceled rental applications, refused to communicate with the temple regarding rental rates, continue to treat the temple unfavorably. It is clear that such illegal tactics are fueled by hostility toward the Satanic Temple's speech, viewpoint, and religion. Incidentally, this week, the Satanic Temple held the March meeting at this school. Uh-huh. They went through with it. They did it before school because I think they want to avoid all the afternoon chaos that the district is forcing upon them.
Sure, and who doesn't love talking about science at 6 a.m.?
I know. It's 8 a.m., but it's still early for kids. I did ask...
It's early for adults.
It is. I asked June Everett, who's the director of the After School Satan Program, how did that meeting go? Mm. And she said... basically, she told me, yeah, they're still treating us the same way. Here's what she said. They stuck us in a portable classroom that was guarded. They threw up a screen so nobody could see us and stuck us at the end of a hallway that leads to the library that was not occupied. Then they were interrupted by the band class who came in to grab their music stands where they were being stored,
sure,
which is fine.
Sure,
there's
only one room in the school.
Yeah. And I'm going to show you, I know I can't do this on a podcast, I'll show you a picture she sent me of the end of the hallway where there is a screen and a guard put up where no one can enter, where the Satanists are having their science club. And it's literally just some dude sitting on a chair next to a white cloth covering up the screen.
He's on his phone.
Yeah, of course he is. So... She did.
Oh my,
she also told me
God.
The district still hasn't approved our April or May before school Satan Club meetings as
this
of today.
She is destroying me. How, what the fuck could they possibly have been thinking putting up a
They're
sheet?
So bad at this. If a Christian club was treated the same way,
that
this satanic club is being treated by a public school district, there would be nonstop headlines about it in right-wing media. And you know what? They would have a point, because it's religious discrimination. The district hasn't offered any reasonable defense for everything they're doing.
Right.
That's why they are suing now. And I do want to point out, they are asking for how much money in this lawsuit?
How much?
$1. Because this isn't about the money and legal fees.
This is
fees.
A Gwyneth Paltrow thing.
Yeah. They're like, no, I'm doing this for the principle of the thing, because you're treating us unfairly. So I would think, if you were the good news club here that meets at the school, you know what would be a smart move on their part? Say, yeah, they have a right to meet just like we do.
Yeah.
It would be great publicity for them.
We honor everybody's beliefs.
Right.
And stuff like
if
that.
There was a preacher, pastors in the community, they should be standing up for this. You won't. I'm not holding my breath for any of that. Because you'll never expect conservative Christians to stand up for people outside their tribe who are actually being religiously persecuted.
Yeah, the only thing this story is missing is if somebody had also tried to start a Christian club at the same school at the same time, like covertly, to be like, I don't know, my Christian after school club got approved in 2 days and it's been 4 months on the Satan club. But that's a perfect world. These people are doing great work.
Yeah. So
that sheet. Oh, my God. It's so janky. Like, it looks like in the Civil War when somebody is dying and they put up a sheet to give them privacy so you can hear him screaming without having to look at him. That's what it looked like. Is that too vivid?
There you go. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Between coaching, dealing with kids, and immersing myself in the news, one thing is clear. I feel like I never have any time for myself. What would you do with an extra hour in your day? Can you even imagine that? Well, if you know what's important to you, you can prioritize. And therapy can help you learn how to do that. Talking about what matters to you with a professional is such a useful way to understand yourself better so you can make the most of your time. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can help you make the most of your time, no matter where you're starting from. Whether you've been through something rough or just want an outsider's perspective on whatever you're going through, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and flexible enough for anyone's schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/atheist today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/atheist. Let me jump to a different story here. This is hilarious and scary. Evangelical Christians trying to convert you is annoying enough as is. Mm. And now there's an app that is helping them do it, and it knows where you live. And I downloaded it, and I played with it.
What are you doing, Hammond?
This is based on an article in the New Republic by Elle Hardy. She's the reporter who did this. But there's an app called Bless Every Home, or also called the Bless App, if you go to the App Store. And basically, here's what I did with it. I downloaded it, and I said, they're like, what neighborhood would you like to convert, basically? Mm. I'm paraphrasing here. But I'm like, I'm going to type in an address near where I live.
Mm. I was sure you were going to say my address. Yeah,
I would have done that, but I needed to pay money to do two addresses. So I didn't do yours. But I did one near me, and all of a sudden, what pops up? Of course, all the addresses near where I live, along with the names of everyone who lives there. And I'm like, oh, and there's my name and my home. Like,
wow. I mean,
it tells you exactly, is that stuff publicly available?
Yes.
And that is what the Christians behind the app say. It's like, we're not doing anything weird. This is publicly available data.
Does it have like your voting history? Because I assume that's where they get this information, right?
Like, if you were running a political campaign, you could have access to this information too, which is what you're getting at. It does tell you, like, how often do they vote?
Right.
You won't know who they vote for necessarily. But if I'm an organizer, I could say, I know, I talked to this couple. I know they vote for Democrats or Republicans or whatever.
Well, like, if you've ever, like, knocked doors for an election,
you
get a thing and it has everybody's address and, like, their voting history.
So that part alone, it's like, well, it's a little creepy that a random Christian can just type in a street address and now know who lives there and stuff. Here's where it gets even creepier. There is a notes app on there that lets the users share information about you as if it's like a political campaign, but it makes it a lot easier for members of a church to keep tabs on who might be especially vulnerable and who has kids and who's not white.
And
what? This is what the article said. It puts a lot of features at the fingertips of the faithful, including the ability to filter whole neighborhoods by religion, ethnicity, Hispanic country of origin, assimilation, and whether there are children living in the household.
What do you think assimilation means? Like, I know what the word
I don't know
means.
How they intend it, because I didn't see that in the free version I downloaded.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that part is getting at, but according to one person she spoke to, a customer of the app. In one instance, he points to the shareable note-taking function and suggests leaving information for each household. This is in a video he made for his church. Like, here's how we can use it. He points to the what information can you leave, such as, quote, daughter left for college, mother is in the hospital. Asked by a
trainee. Going out of town for 2 weeks over Christmas. The web bandits strike again.
Yes. Asked by a trainee how to respond to concerns that people may have about the app, privacy issues, like about the app. This guy conceded, this thing is so powerful. It is an invasion of privacy. That's in the article in the New Republic.
Did he say it with as much glee in his
no,
voice as you
have?
No,
that's me acting. But I feel like there's no other way to say that. It has the support, the group that makes the app, it has the support of organizations that power the $100 million He Gets Us campaign that directs people to church.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, setting aside the privacy concerns for a second, when I typed in an address next to me and I got everyone's names and addresses
listed for me,
I could pick one home in particular, and then it gave me the options of, what do I want to do for these people? Pray, care, share, or disciple. I could put notes about it
What's
in there.
What's the difference between pray and care, do you think?
I don't know. Like, maybe I'll bring them soup one day because I know they're sick.
Oh, care is something a little more physically.
I can literally tap out, like, I prayed for them 10 times, but this home in my community has only been prayed for 7 times. Hey, church, we need to get on this. Let me share all my data I collected about my neighbors here. It's all the ways you.
What
it's a way to document all the ways you've annoyed your neighbors with Jesus. Like, do
like
I care?
So I can look up on this app and find out that somebody's been praying for my house every.
If you're in
every
a church's system, yes.
Am I in a church's system? Is everyone in a church's?
You can sign up.
Like, they have access to
it.
Public records, I guess.
For the basics, and
this
then if you're in a mega church, if you're in a mega church that is part of a certain community. And your church said, everybody, we bought the mega plan, so we are going to give all of you access to, like, a shared data pool. Now we can all keep tabs on how many doors have we all knocked on? How much information do we know about the family that lives here? That's where it gets creepier. Like, do I care if someone is keeping tabs on where I live and how much they've prayed for me? Not really. It's a waste of their time. Am I kind of weirded out knowing that people can keep track of how many times they prayed for me? Like, I'm a meal and you're tracking calories on a diet or something? Like, a little bit. But it is possible for a church to see who has not been subject to proselytizing, what's going on in their lives, if members of the church want to share that information. Like, this kid just went off to college. Empty nesters here. They could use some friends. Let's all go there. One missionary told the New Republic he used information about which homes have children to send them invitations to Vacation Bible School, which might be harmless enough. It's junk mail, whatever. But it's not hard to imagine how that information could be used for more direct forms of contact later on. And then you realize none of these people are opting into the system, and there's no way to opt out of it.
Yeah.
They're not asking to be preached at. But the app also tells you, I found this interesting, the app tells you when there's fresh meat nearby, because one of the add-ons you could purchase is a weekly list of up to 25 households that have moved into a 15-mile radius of your church.
Okay.
So now you know these people are new. They might be looking for a church home. Let's all go knock on their doors.
Oh, Christ.
Uh-huh.
Much. I don't know.
Like,
man.
It's one thing for commercial brands or political organizers to use this, but it's kind of messed up when Christians could find out where all the Muslims and Jews live.
Yeah, I do hate that.
One promotional video seen by the New Republic featured a Christian describing Houston suburbs, where they live, with large Muslim populations as shooting fish in a barrel.
No, you can't say that.
That's the word they used. And now imagine what happens if Christian nationalists take over the government after the 2024 elections. This is also from the article. It doesn't take a leap of faith to appreciate that Muslims, Hindus, and Jews might feel uncomfortable seeing a group of hardcore Christians prayer walk past their house or place of worship, seeking to drive out demons and force heathens to see the light. Equally, newly arrived refugees, like in Texas, might well find a knock on the door from strangers with knowledge of their personal circumstances. They might find that distressing.
Maybe the thing I hate most about this is, like, I guess the commodification of it, of, like, just these days, everything needs to be scaled up. Everything needs to get bigger. Everything needs to, like, go deeper. And it's just, like, I know proselytizing is part of the game, but can you just sort of, like, sit on your laurels for, like, a couple of years and just kind of see how that goes? Maybe see if you can stop abusing the people whom you already...
Who
are already in your church, and then maybe space out. I just don't understand.
What would the story be if we knew Muslim groups were using this sort of
bath? What would the story be if you and I had this information and walked around to Christians? We would get fucking shot, and that's kind of a joke, but mostly not a joke.
Shooting fish in a barrel. We're the barrel.
No. Also, I can't imagine shooting fish is that easy.
Yeah,
the water
slippery.
Moves the bolt.
That's true.
Slippery!
And you know, the thing is, like, what would you search up? I'm looking for the wealthiest suburbs where I live, because if I can get one of these people, that's a lot of money coming into my
Truly.
Church down the line. But you're right. Like, this shows Christianity is a product to sell. There's nothing special about it. It just needs new customers all the time. It's a multi-level marketing scheme.
It really is. Like, it really is. Come in, give us $5 a week when you come to your little things, and then you'll get a promotion, and then you'll get to dedicate a lot of your time to the church as well. Doesn't that sound great? So now we have your money and your time.
Yep. By the way, I looked up the social media accounts for this app. Because this is how they promote it to all their people. As soon as this New Republic article came out, they appeared to shut down their Facebook and Twitter things. I think they don't like that people are not happy with them, and so they don't want to talk about Jesus for once. That's what it took.
Well, and
exposure.
That, to me, means they know what they're doing is shady as fuck.
Right?
Like, I appreciate that it is not illegal.
Yes, and it's not. And nothing they're doing is illegal, as far as we know.
And this is publicly available information. Like I said, when I was a committee person for the Democratic Party, I had a thing of, like, everybody in my, or all the Democrats and independents in my neighborhood,
right,
and their voting history and shit like that, which
because if they're regular voters, you want to make sure they're coming out.
Yeah.
But I don't know anything else about that.
Right. But even having that information made me kind of uncomfortable. Like, it feels really personal. So I just can't imagine having access to that and then being like, you know how I can use this? I can spread it to every idiot in a 10-mile area and give all of these people who technically could have access this information if they had the wherewithal to do it, but just delivering it into their pocket. So now what happens if some right-wing extremist gets a hold of this app and is like, I'm going to find a Muslim family near me?
What's, like, stopping them from keeping tabs on, I know this family's had an abortion? Like,
oh,
if they knew stuff about you in Texas.
It's creepy. Yeah. I hate it.
So let's move on to a different story. This one involves Fox News, because over the weekend, I'm going to play a clip for you. This is Pete Hegseth, one of their weekend anchors. And in the midst of the weekend morning show, they took a break to talk about something else. I'll play it for you. We could react to it after you hear it. Here you go.
We have more Fox and Friends coming up, but you know what? This is a transition for transitions, if you've ever had one.
So Fox and Friends.
This is very Fox and Friends, so ready your heart.
Good.
It's the fifth Sunday of Lent, and our prayer series continues with a reading of prayer from the Hallow app. We all need it. Let's do it this morning. Close your eyes, if you would. Bow your head. Jesus.
Yeah, and this goes on for many minutes. He just prayed
on the news.
On the news. Well, big
quotations on hand. And he's been doing this for 4 weeks?
Yeah, they've been doing this for weeks. But yeah, this clip went a little viral. But basically, yes, they stopped the broadcast. That you could see in the video, the two other anchors are just, like, bowing their heads and praying. And then he just reads a prayer. And whatever, the prayer itself, unimportant.
When you say reads a prayer, is that like a Bible quote or just like a nice thing somebody said once?
No, it's Jesus, today we begin the holy period of whatever.
Okay.
In these last 2 weeks of Lent, help us understand the mystery of your sacrifice and surrender, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, it's not just a prayer. It's a specifically Christian prayer, because of course it is. Because if there's one thing Jesus told people about prayer, it's you have to do it in public on TV. Otherwise, it doesn't count and God doesn't hear you. Mm-hmm. One commentator online put it, we interrupt the bearing of false witness for a moment of prepackaged prayer.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then they, I assume, just spread more lies, further poisoning the brains of the most ignorant people in the country. The thing that was funny, it's not entirely weird for Fox to do a live read for a product, even though that seems like something you would expect on like a right-wing podcast or any podcast, to be fair. But, and I was thinking a few years ago, they also aired a 3-minute promo for Ark Encounter, the creationist theme park.
Did they?
They did. And it was part of a paid advertisement.
Sure. And three-minute advertisement.
Like, they put it in the Chiron at the bottom. This segment is sponsored by Ark Encounter. And then they did, like, wow, this is Ark Encounter. This looks amazing.
Jeez Louise, God is real.
The thing is, if you're watching this segment, at the very beginning of the prayer bit, you could see in the Chiron, it says, like, Fox and Friends Sunday Prayer Series, sponsored by Halo, the number one prayer app.
Wow.
But then that Chiron kind of disappeared and you just hear them praying. And if you just tuned in, it's like, whoa, oh, they're,
I guess this is what we're doing.
That's just the thing they do now. What Hegseth, the anchor there, he mentioned the partnership at the beginning and end of that segment. The prayer itself seemed to come out of nowhere unless you read the fine print there on the screen. Mm-hmm. Like, you would not know the network was being paid to have the host say all this stuff.
Weird.
And in fact, a month ago on Ash Wednesday, the same network ran a longer segment about the popularity of Halo, this amazing Bible app. Here's what the Chiron said. Halo sees download surge after Super Bowl ad. And then right underneath in smaller print, this segment is made possible by our sponsor, Halo.
Wow.
And during that segment, which lasted a lot, like 10 minutes.
Really?
Mark Wahlberg, the actor, and another actor, Jonathan Rumi, were part of this segment to discuss the Super Bowl ad they did for the prayer app,
Wahlberg in this story
deeply
now?
Catholic, and he's talking about how important prayer is to him. You know why? Because he owns stake in Halo.
Also, he blinded a guy and almost killed him.
Yeah, so they were on this segment to talk about how important prayer is to them and why this app helps them do it. And they mentioned the company's name a couple of times, but unless you knew what to look for, you would not know. The company also paid for them to be on that segment on Fox. And again, I want to repeat, they're promoting Jesus, not prayer, not religion in general, like a very specific type. The New York Times reported last month that Halo has the backing of a lot of powerful conservatives, and Wahlberg himself has a significant financial stake in the company. Halo raised, according to the article, $40 million in 2021. They count the tech billionaire Peter Thiel and Senator J.D. Vance among the investors.
Oh, fuck Vance.
Full access to the app costs $69.99 a year, in case, you know, in case you want to document all your
prayers. Hold on. It's a paid app?
To pray. To help you pray. And the company's CEO's name, guess what it is? Guess what the company's CEO's name is?
Oh, my God. John Buttfuck.
Close.
Okay.
Alex Jones. He wants to make sure you know it's a different one.
Different Alexander Jones? Yeah. Alexander T. Jones?
He goes by Alex Jones, not even a middle initial. But, like, yeah.
I mean, he should consider Buttfuck as an alternative last name.
It would be so much easier, for him. Ultimately, this business found a new way to target religious conservatives willing to fork over money for something they could do for free, like bottling water for you. Somewhere a church leader is mad they didn't think of this first. It's just like the He Gets Us campaign. It's $100 million to steer people to churches with no discernible aim, except it's kind of a conservative
Put more people in churches, and then you have the churches under your thumb because they're all conservative.
An app. Go convert the Muslims in your community.
Bada bing, bada boom. Christian nation.
And also, I would have to say, to promote the idea of God, which is what the He Gets Us campaign is doing, or Jesus, and to promote prayer, which is what the Halo app is doing, without acknowledging the very real threat of Christian nationalism, since that's the kind of Christianity they're promoting, that's like a junk food company telling you to, like, eat up without any mention of how their product is going to make you sick.
Yeah, they're the Sweetums of the real world.
Prayer doesn't need advertisers, but religion a very useful tool for separating gullible people from their money. And Halo is taking advantage of that, and they know Fox is willing to take their money to promote it. Like, it's a partnership made in hell. Good times.
That's really sinister. I don't know why the fact that it's $69 is really funny to me.
$70.
That's so much money.
$70 to track your own prayers for a year. Because, I don't know, you need to do it for an hour, and if you do it less...
Yeah.
God will smite you?
I mean, I just paid $5 for Stardew Valley, and I'm kind of regretting that because I got so bored trying to pick the teeny tiny outfits that she wears.
There you go.
So I just cannot imagine coughing up $70 for this stupid... Although, if you're trying to target Muslims and atheists in your neighborhood, that's an easy way to do it.
Oh, God,
this is going to end on somebody's death. I just feel it in my heart. There is going to be a mass shooting where a dude has this app open. I'm calling it now in the next 5 years.
You know, I've had instances where there was someone who did something horrific. And if you look, because everyone looks on their social media, what were they listening to? What do they like on Facebook? And once upon a time, I forgot which time it was because it happens all the time. Someone had liked some atheist content, of which was my page or my site.
No.
To the point where a reporter was asking me, hello, let's talk. And I'm like, I don't know this dude, his values. I didn't say this. I was just thinking in my head, because obviously whatever this guy did had nothing to do with anything I was pushing.
Right.
But it was clear he liked some atheist content. But that's the thing. You want to draw connections wherever you can, and sometimes you can go down a weird rabbit hole like that.
Well, and if you cast a wide net, you're going to catch some dolphins. I don't think that's the expression.
That is exactly
or a thing anyone's ever said ever.
Let's talk about Wisconsin. There's actually some good news out of Wisconsin.
Wisconsin's been kind of the dark horse of positivity in this.
It has. And this involves their Supreme Court, which if you need a recollection here,
last year,
the Wisconsin Supreme Court had an election for a swing seat, and a liberal, Janet Protasiewicz, won that election, giving liberals a 4-3 majority on this court.
I need to tell, what was the dude's name whom she beat out?
Do you
know off the top of your head? Okay. My dad, who was a Republican up until 2016, he made us as a family sit down and watch that dude's, like, because he made this speech that was like, I wish I could say I was beaten fairly, but she, basically just called her, like, a...
illegitimate in some way.
Yeah, exactly. We had to sit and watch that as a family and listen to my dad make fun of this dude. Like,
nice.
This was... a holiday in my parents' household who live in Wisconsin.
So they have a 4-3 liberal majority. They just got rid of legislative gerrymandering. They're doing good stuff up there.
Am I going to move to Wisconsin? Would that be a twist?
You might. Not from Illinois. You're not, but soon.
Fair enough.
Other people. They just issued a ruling recently saying that a nonprofit organization cannot get out of paying unemployment taxes just because they're overseen by a religious ministry.
That was a rule?
That was a rule. You could say, well, I belong to a church, so I should be exempt from having to pay any taxes. And the court said, yeah, but you're not a religious organization, so yeah, you got to pay the taxes. So I want to talk about what that means, how that happened. This case involves something called the Wisconsin Unemployment Compensation Act. Basically, employers in the state... employers in the state, they have to give money to the government to help pay citizens temporary benefits when they're out of work. And that's fine. Yeah. That's good. We want employers to do that.
Yes, please.
In 1972, religious nonprofits were declared exempt from that law. Basically, the law said nonprofits that are run by a church or ministry and that operate, this is important, and that operate primarily for religious purposes, do not have to pay into the system.
Which is terrible.
It is terrible. Why are we exempting them and not, say, just a regular charity that does good work? Mm-hmm. Like, why do they get an exemption and not everyone else? But that's what they did in 1972. So last year, there was a group of charities overseen by a Catholic diocese, and they said, well, they're our daddy company right there, the Catholic Church. What do we do? They do things like job placement. They do things like give food to the hungry. They help people with developmental disabilities. Wonderful charities. They mm-hmm. do really good work. And they said, we belong to the Catholic diocese here. Like, they support us. We right. work under them. So we want to be exempt from paying taxes. And the basically all the lower courts are, and the group that decides this, they said, no, you do pretty secular work yeah. here. And this went all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And last year, an appellate court ruled that the Catholic Charities Bureau, along with these four groups, like the charitable wing of the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. You're not eligible for that exemption. And no one doubts they're run by the Catholic diocese, but the question is the work you do religious? And I just told you what they did.
Yeah.
All of those things are important. I'm so glad these groups exist. Mm-hmm. And this Catholic charity says the desire to help the poor and disadvantaged is an extension of their faith. What the courts are arguing is that helping the poor and disadvantaged is not inherently religious.
Yeah.
All those things are secular in nature. Just because you're overseen by the Catholic Church mm-hmm. does not mean you are working to promote Catholicism.
Right.
And if you're not actively and directly promoting your faith, why do you deserve a tax break meant to benefit religious organizations? And so for decades, by the way, the Catholic Charities Bureau paid the unemployment taxes because they themselves said our work is charitable, educational, and rehabilitative, not religious. In 2015, that's when they applied for the religious exemption and they got rejected. And so this,
and so now they're suing over
this goes back and forth for years. Like, the decision gets reversed by one entity, so they're happy, but then it gets reversed again and they're mad. Then mm-hmm. they go to the courts and one judge says, fine, you are tax exempt. Uh-huh. Then the appellate court says, no, you're not. And this is why this goes to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Uh-huh. So when they considered the case, they arrived at the same conclusion. They basically said, we're not looking to the top of your organizational pyramid sure. that has the Catholic Church
there. We're looking at boots on the ground.
Yes. They're saying we're looking at the subgroups themselves. We're looking at your activities, mm-hmm. not your motivations. Mm-hmm. To put that another way, I don't care if you claim to be Catholic. Any group can claim to be whatever you are, even if you're like organizationally run by Catholics. What matters is what you do.
Yeah.
And this is what the majority, the four justices, wrote. The record demonstrates that Catholic Charities Bureau and the sub-entities neither attempt to imbue program participants with the Catholic faith, they're not forcing it upon anybody, nor supply any religious materials to program participants or employees. Those are not required, but those would be strong indications that yeah. what you're doing is to advance your religion.
I'm concerned that they're going to learn from this, we need to give everybody pamphlets all the time.
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
What the majority said is their activities are primarily charitable and secular. Mm. The activities include job placement, job training, placement, and coaching, as well as services related to activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. They said this is a wholly secular endeavor. Such services can be provided by organizations of either religious or secular motivations, and the services provided would not differ in any sense. And so that's why they ruled, you're not operating primarily for a religious purpose.
Yeah.
Therefore, you don't get the exemption.
Sounds like good sense.
Like, if the Catholic Church was literally running these organizations, maybe a different outcome happens. But sure. the church it's an arm's length
it's
distance.
Like a diaspora of Catholicism.
Yeah. And what this means is from here on out, at least in Wisconsin, charities will have to do a lot more mm-hmm. than just point to like a nearby cross
right.
to prove they deserve a faith-based exemption under the law. And I was surprised by the ruling because it feels courageous for any Supreme Court, statewide or otherwise,
yeah.
to state the obvious.
Yeah.
Like, just because an organization cites a religious link doesn't make it religious. Now, that's a far cry from the U.S. Supreme Court, which said, oh, Hobby Lobby can get out of paying for contraception insurance. Right. As part of insurance plans, because their owners are religious. And so they say they're a Christian company, so they don't have to do anything that everyone else has to do.
Uh-huh.
And what the fear is what if the Supreme Court in Wisconsin went the other way and they said, yeah, you can get an exemption because yeah. you are overseen by the Catholic Church. According to Patrick Elliott of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the next step then would be arguments to exempt religious hospitals and colleges like Marquette University from paying the unemployment tax.
Sure.
It's, he said, it's really a win for employees who work for religious organizations.
Yeah.
They get coverage now under the Wisconsin unemployment system.
Yeah, that's the important thing to understand, is that means if somebody loses their job from the this thing, right, they would not receive... Is that how it would work? They wouldn't receive unemployed...
They can't file for unemployment because their daddy charity is not putting into the system.
So as somebody who has many times depended on unemployment to, you know, keep me in a home, that's bad. I think if people lose their jobs, they shouldn't starve and die. Yeah. Hot take.
You socialist.
I know.
And this is why maybe a lot of these groups are not going to necessarily be tempted to be overtly proselytizing as a result of this decision.
Sure.
Because if you want to play that game and get the tax exemption, your employees may not want to work for you anymore because you're a religious organization.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Specifically. It also means, like, okay, you have to just... play the game as everyone else does. If you actually care about this stuff and your goal is we are inspired by our faith to help other people, why would that change just because you have to pay a tax now?
Helping other people involves paying your taxes.
Yes.
Like, that's all it, like, taxes pay for our roads and our schools. And, like, I know I'm not the first person to say this, but it's sort of like the thing we need to keep going as a society. And it's a good thing to pay your taxes.
Yeah, because taxes are not the problem. If you want to argue about where they're going, we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
but
truly.
Also, what are we mad about when people who are under unemployment are getting taxes for a temporary amount of time? Like, that should be a win-win for everybody.
Pay taxes when you get unemployment. You pay taxes on your unemployment.
By paying into the system, they're actually doing even more good.
Yeah.
You would argue. You could argue.
I would argue.
What's been really fun with the Wisconsin Supreme Court is watching the three conservatives who currently sit on it, like, just be mad.
Oh, yeah.
Here's how the dissent from the conservatives opened from the person who wrote the dissent. She cited Matthew chapter 22, King James, "Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's," which is a weird thing.
That's exactly right. Caesar's shit is taxes.
Right.
Render your taxes.
And by the way, one paragraph after she cited a Bible verse, she said the liberal majority is, quote, "impermissibly entangling the government in church doctrine."
Ma'am, are you confused?
The other side is merging church and state, says the justice who just cited a Bible verse in her legal opinion.
How? What is she talking about?
I have no idea, but be mad. It's fun. Now, the religious groups defending Catholic Charities, they're mad.
Obviously.
And they're vowing to take this to the U.S. Supreme Court. They're going to appeal.
I was just thinking, can something go from the state to the national Supreme Court?
I'm trying to figure out why this would be allowed. This is beyond my pay grade, but it's like, it's a Wisconsin issue.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why this is a U.S. Supreme Court thing. But
I mean, unless they go after, like, the state of Wisconsin.
I don't know.
Is that maybe what they're thinking?
Don't know if it'll work. It's just one of those things Beckett Fund does in order to get money by saying, we're still fighting this, everybody. It's not over yet.
Is it just a big money laundering operation? Because they're all suing each other all the time, and they're just, like, swapping legal fees. I mean, like, ugh, now you owe me $300,000. Ugh, now I owe you $2.3 million.
These organizations, these right-wing legal groups, Liberty Counsel is another one that does this, too. They could lose every case. It doesn't matter, because no one who gives them money cares about their track record.
They want to be able to
They fundraise by saying, hey, we're fighting for you, so give us money so we can keep doing it. Yeah. And again, it doesn't matter that they keep losing.
Yeah.
Because whatever, if they get one victory, they coast on it for life, like Ken Ham saying, I debated Bill Nye 10 years ago, which is an email he just sent this past month.
That was 10 years ago.
Uh-huh. So,
jeez Louise. Time, huh?
A lot of this is long overdue. By the way, we know there are mega church pastors who don't pay taxes on their mansions because they can claim it's owned by the ministry, so it's religious. Should religious ministries be allowed to claim property tax exemptions on everything they own, even when the land isn't being used for religious reasons? Of course not.
Of course not.
But this is a perfect example of them actually having to do what they're supposed to do instead of taking advantage of their religion for selfish needs.
You guys.
And by the way, this ruling, does it stop the Catholic Church from doing anything? No. All it does is say, you know the thing you've been doing for many years? Yeah, just
keep doing it.
You can keep doing it. They can still help people. No one's saying, like, that's the funny thing about them getting mad.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting mad. All we're saying is, you know the thing you've been doing for, like, 50 years? Yeah, it's fine. Keep doing it.
Don't you hate that? Don't you hate when things happen for 50 years and then continue happening for another 50 years?
It makes you wonder, like, I thought you said your whole faith was about helping the poor and marginalized, and the second...
Not like that.
Yeah, like, what... Only the good ruling stopped you from helping the poor, apparently?
Maybe they'll shut down. Wouldn't that be a shame? So,
the funny thing is, by appealing this to the U.S. Supreme Court, the Catholic Church is basically saying screwing over the unemployed is also a part of their faith.
I mean, I'm sure it's in the Bible somewhere.
Which is weird, because when I started this story and I told you the sort of things these charities under the Catholic Church were doing, it's like, oh, those are actually good nice, good things.
Yeah.
And now they're like, sorry, we also want to screw over the poor and the people who are unemployed.
Well, it's not enough to say we're doing good things. We also need special accommodations because we're God's most special boy.
If we're not hurting people, how is that our religion then?
Yeah.
This is a part of what we are.
This is miserable.
Right. One last story for you here.
Okay.
This is a recent survey that came out from the Pew Research Center, and it found that a record high 80% of Americans say religion is losing its influence in our lives.
Excuse me, could you say that number again?
Yeah, 80% of Americans say religion is losing its influence in our lives.
Out of every 5 Americans, 4 are like, yeah, religion's going away.
Yes, now, most of them think that's a bad thing.
I don't care. I just like that they acknowledge it for once.
Yeah. 57% of Americans, let me give you some specific numbers here. 18% of Americans say it's gaining influence.
That's
the other 80% say it's losing influence.
Yeah.
But among that, the percentages here, let's talk about a couple things. There are 49% of people have a, sorry, let me back up. 57% of Americans have a net positive view of religion. So this is a different number altogether. But 57% of Americans think religion is a good thing because they say religion's influence is declining, but that's bad.
Sure.
That's 49% of Americans. Then there are other people who say, like, religious influence is declining,
but
that's good.
Yeah.
That's 13%. So, like, there are a lot of discrepancies. Like, that's our group here.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, I should back up. Religion's influence, I don't think it's declining. I think it's growing.
Do you?
But I do think if it's declining, that's good. If religion's influence is growing, that would be bad.
Right.
And combined, that's 19% of Americans who have a net negative view of religion.
I see.
We're in the minority here.
Well, I don't think religion is becoming more important. I think it's becoming less important. It's just having its death rattles right now. That's what I think.
And that those death rattles are what scare me. Like, the influence there is growing because of that. Like, if you believe, as I do, that religion is a largely pernicious force in the U.S.
Yeah, which I do as well.
Yeah, which is, it underlies anti-abortion laws, anti-LGBTQ bigotry. It gives Donald Trump the support he needs to make another run for the White House. Then we have a long way to go when it comes to educating Americans about how and why they would be better off without faith playing a significant role in their lives.
I guess my gentle pushback on that, because I do believe, obviously, the like evangelical right is fucked. I guess when I think it's losing its influence, I mean in a, like, in my day-to-day life, are people religious all the time? Like, am I seeing religious expressions day-to-day? And I feel like aside from, like, bad cross tattoos, it's in, like, fish on cars, it seems like it's a declining thing.
It's not something everyone talks about. That's what you're getting at.
It's just, like, a small but galvanized core.
And my argument is when it, and I'm not disagreeing here, when it comes to the places of power, government, law, all that stuff in politics, it's very much leading the conversation, and that's what worries me. But yeah, on a day-to-day thing, maybe you don't see religion or treat it with unearned respect.
I think we
like
had the same feeling. It's just sort of a different like importance.
Yes. Now, there were other things that were in this survey that are worth discussing in addition to how people see religion's influence going.
Okay.
For all their bluster about the need to have God in government, only about half of Republicans think Trump is religious at all. Only 50% of Republicans say Trump is religious. Either very religious or somewhat religious, which is funny.
Has anyone ever asked him what version of the Bible he reads?
I believe he has been asked, like, his favorite Bible verse.
That one is Corinthians 2 or whatever. It's
No. He said, I don't have a favorite Bible verse. Like,
I love them all.
Yeah, something like that. The 2 Corinthians gaffe that he made was just something in a speech where he was citing something.
Said it wrong.
He just said it wrong.
Because he's never said a Bible verse out loud.
Right, and never heard it out loud by a preacher somewhere.
Everybody's talking about this quote, love is patient, love is kind. I've never heard of this quote. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a Trump impression
in my back
pocket.
Yeah, it's very bad. I found it funny that 6% of Republicans said Trump is very religious. It's like, on what grounds are you getting that
Listen,
from?
Sir, you can't, I understand if you want to like pretend that he's cosplaying as a Christian, but you cannot tell me anybody thinks this dude is actually religious.
Yeah, you could say he pays them lip service, appoints their preferred judges, cedes policy determining power to Christian right leaders.
Yeah.
But
he's
on the team. He's playing for the team, but he's not one of the team. That's funny to me. This is also weird to me. When it comes to Joe Biden, only 3% of Republicans say Joe Biden is very religious, which is weird because I'm like, The Catholic president is 69% of Republicans say Joe Biden is not too religious or not at all religious. Which I'm like,
thing of who's the most religious politician.
If they're religious but not conservative, you don't think they're religious is where they're going with that. It is disturbing, by the way, overall, 54% of Americans. Only 54% of Americans said Biden is religious. Overall, everybody. Only 54. Though he wears his Catholicism on his sleeve.
Well, I think we are getting to the point in American history where we're simply conflating conservatism and religiosity, right? Like, they're not the same thing.
Yeah, his policy decisions are not based on his personal religious views. He personally does not like abortion. Joe Biden has said this over and over. But policy-wise, he doesn't believe it's the government's job to interfere. And because of things like that, I believe, that's why they're like, well, then he's not a true Catholic or something. Meanwhile, you have someone like Mike Johnson, the speaker, who is thumping your head with a Bible all the time.
Correct.
So when he does it, they're like, yeah, that's a religious dude. But Bidens are treated as like non-existent. So that's a thing. What's funny to me is in 2015 and 2016, when Trump was running for the first time, there were Christian leaders who tried to convince their tribe, like, look, I know Trump doesn't act like us or sound like us, like trying to explain away the 2 Corinthians thing and the Access Hollywood tape. But they were like, but you guys, he's working on it. And I'll give you an example. James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family, said in 2016 that Donald Trump recently became born again. In fact, I know the guy who led him to Christ. Trump is a baby Christian.
Those were his words. Because he would never get his hair wet in public. And so he was not baptized.
Baby Christian, half right.
He is baby shaped, isn't he?
You know these people would be like, Jimmy Carter, that guy's not religious at all.
Imagine if the world rallied around Jimmy Carter the way they rallied around Trump. Oh my God, we'd have such a nice guinea worm free life.
By the way,
was that his thing? I think that was his thing.
It might be.
Jimmy Carter did get rid of one of the plagues.
Yeah.
The plagues.
67% of Republicans say Trump stands up for people of faith, which, I mean, if you're conservative Christian,
I'll hand them that one.
He's not a fan of the Muslims. Trump.
Fair.
So
fair.
When they
say Trump stands
up for people of faith, it's like, oh, right, they don't think Muslims count. They're not people to those people. The gap between Trump's rhetoric and his reputation, I've never seen as any wider.
It's amazing.
Different question on the same survey. What about religion in general? Have conservative Christians gone too far in imposing their views on government and public schools? There's a right answer to this. Yes.
Oh.
I mean, that's my answer. we wouldn't be having our culture war battles over like book bans and trans inclusivity if there wasn't an undercurrent of faith, mm-hmm. specifically conservative Christianity, steering people in a really harmful direction. And yet, only 48% of Americans said conservative Christians are going too far in pushing their religious beliefs in government and schools.
I mean, I guess if it's your beliefs they're pushy and it doesn't feel pushy.
Yeah. 50% of all Americans said secular liberals have gone too far in keeping religious values out
Excuse
of government
you?
And public schools.
Have you met the government?
I'm reading the report. I'm not saying these people have any sense. Like, apparently neutrality... I'm not complaining about the poll. Yeah,
yeah, I was
research.
Just wondering. It's a Pew poll.
Okay. It's a reputable survey. Yeah. But 50% of Americans said liberals who are not religious, secular liberals, have gone too far in trying to keep religious values out of the government.
You know what this
schools.
Is, I bet? This is a reflection of the, like... The fucking Jesus displays, church what are they called? Nativity displays in town halls.
Right.
And when the church and crosses on public
groups
property.
Groups fight to maintain neutrality. A lot of Americans see it as anti-faith because they're dumb. But that is what they think.
Yes.
And so you get a lot of that. This is the power of the conservative media environment because it doesn't matter if it's Fox News or the conservatives who write at the New York Times opinion section. Many Americans are being spoon-fed lies about what is going on.
Truly.
And then they believe. It's like, oh, these people are trying to remove faith. It's like, none of these stories that involve taking down a nativity scene or putting up an alternative to a nativity scene, which is really what happens, or having an after-school Satan club at the same schools where there are Christian clubs, none of that involves saying, take down the other thing. They're saying, oh, those are your rules? Then we want to also play your game. That's government neutrality. That is what almost every one of these stories is about.
Yeah.
And yet that is perceived as anti-Christian because a bunch of liars or ignorant people are like, this is anti-Christian. And no one calls them out on it.
You know, I heard Trump picked his
Not
new...
Not enough people call him out on it.
Trump picked his new campaign slogan for 2024.
Uh-huh.
It's Trump 2024, double plus good. It's a 1984 reference.
Got it.
Because they're being so sinister.
Never
that
read it.
That was a pretty good literary joke.
Yeah.
And I don't think I necessarily got what I needed.
Yeah,
out
you're
of that.
Not on
I'll
that one.
I'll take another swing.
All right.
My 1984. I've only read 1984 once, so I'm just gonna have to dig in pretty deep because double plus good is kind of all I had to pull.
Try again next time. I'll delete the last 7 minutes of this podcast. Here's another sad thing in the survey. When it comes to Christian nationalism, what percentage of Americans have heard about or read about Christian nationalism?
100%.
Lower. What percent of adults have heard of Christian nationalism? Heard of it?
70%.
45.
That's, Hemant, that's what we call incorrect.
Here's what's scarier.
This is
in September of 2022... In September 2022, it was also 45%. And today, it's the same number. Even though there is more overt expressions of Christian nationalism
like,
and a very real threat.
People use the words Christian nationalism now and like, hey, we're going to take the stigma out of it. It's like when women tried to take back bitch and like the gay people are like, no, we're good. Actually, we have it.
The numbers haven't moved at all. When it comes to, do you have a favorable view of it? Number hasn't changed. It's at 5%, which seems really low to me, but okay. But only 5% back then and now say they have a favorable view of it. What percentage don't like Christian nationalism? It went from 24 to 25%, virtually unchanged. What percentage have never heard of that phrase? 54% in 2022, 54% today. We have not moved the needle at all on telling people Christian nationalism is a bad thing, that it needs to be defeated, that it's a very real threat heading into the election. Mm. That's the scary thing about it. Those numbers haven't moved at a time when Christian nationalism forms the basis for Project 2025, which is what Republicans will do if they control enough of the government.
Yeah.
It is a handbook. It's literally printed. It is out there saying, this is what we want to do. Some of it's religious. Some of it's just dumb. But, like, this is our plan. Yeah. The fact that a majority of Americans have no clue about this link between God and government,
mm-hmm.
that's a failure of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know who deserves all the blame for that.
Right.
You could start with mainstream journalists who have access to giant audiences. You could blame Democratic Party leaders who have the ability to speak for the party.
Right.
Like, they're so afraid of criticizing religion, period, that they're not condemning the most destructive form of it.
Mm.
So that's scary. By the way, same survey, Pew Research Center, found that 28% of Americans believe the Bible should have more influence on U.S. laws than the will of the people.
That's what I was going to say.
And so it is imperative. We keep talking about how that's exactly what would happen mm-hmm. if Republicans take back the White House and Senate.
Yeah.
And it would be the worst interpretations of the Bible, no less. Also troubling, what percentage of Americans believe church-state separation ought to be enforced?
Oh, no. No. If it's not, like, at least 90%, I'm going to just go ahead and jump 55. Out the window.
55. Only 55% of Americans believe church-state separation ought to be enforced, even though that's, like, the principle that this country was founded on. 13% of Americans want Christianity declared the official religion of the country.
What percent?
13. And you could bet good money that those are the same Americans who say they cherish the Constitution 100%. And wrap themselves up with the flag.
100%.
Like, but also theocracy. Yeah. Okay, there is one bright spot that I really liked in the report.
Okay.
When it comes to religion's influence in society and who believes we need more of it, the numbers go down when we talk about younger Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about Americans over 65, 72% of Americans over 65 say religious influence is growing, and that's a good thing, or that it's declining and that's bad. They have a net positive view of religion.
Yeah.
But when you ask people under the age of 30, that number drops to 36%.
Okay.
So, like, you could do this for any positive question about religion. Mm-hmm. Like, is religious influence good? Older Americans say yes. Younger Americans are basically no. The question of, do you have a net negative view of religion? That you think religion's on the decline,
right.
and that's a good thing,
right.
like we do. Or that it's on the upswing and that's bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for confusing everybody here.
I know
that's,
what you mean.
That latter one is the one I'm on board with.
Uh-huh.
I think it's more influential, and that's bad. But when it comes to net negative view, over the age of 65, only 10% say it's a bad thing that religion is bad.
Yeah.
Only 10% think that. When it comes to Americans under 30, 30%.
Okay.
So again, there's
double?
Hope for the future, which yeah. makes sense because the people most affected by the anti-abortion, anti-contraception, anti-IVF, anti-sex policies of the GOP, those are the people in the stages of life when having kids is yeah. like a present or future consideration.
Yeah, 60-year-old white men aren't often worried about their, like, fertility years.
Right. And that also suggests there's a line of attack that Democrats can use in their campaigns.
Sure. Democrats, not your grandpa's party. Double guns.
72% of Democratic voters said conservative Christians have gone too far in pushing their beliefs in government and schools, as opposed to, like, all Americans, which was lower.
Mm.
But 72% of Democrats say, yeah, these people have gone too far, which is why Democratic candidates ought to express their support for church-state separation and blocking faith-based right-wing bigots from taking away our freedoms. By the way, 23% of Republicans said the same thing. They think conservative Christians have gone too far.
Really?
So if those, I mean, because there are Republicans who are, like, not necessarily on board with Trump.
Sure.
And if you're making ads that speak to, I support your religious freedom, I'm not going to impose mine on you, I support church-state separation, you actually have a better chance of making headway into some of those Republicans, certainly a lot of those independent voters,
sure.
which could be very important in a swing state.
Yeah.
You would think the possibility of an impending theocracy would make voters care more. But again, most Americans are apathetic about all things political. They
Truly.
Don't pay attention. They don't care. A lot of them don't vote. And if we can get them to vote because we know they're already aligned with our interests,
mm-hmm.
those are the people you need to reach. You're not going to convert Trump people over.
No.
Stop wasting your time.
Well,
it's about getting people who are just like, politics, both parties are the same,
yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Those are the people who could theoretically be convinced. And the point to get across is that Christian nationalism, religious influence in politics, that is bad for everybody. And saying that is not anti-Christian.
Right.
It is for the good of the country for everybody.
Right.
That's all.
I was just thinking about how my friend's husband is from Ireland, so her kids are dual citizens, and I was wondering if there's, like, an age gap that you can be an au pair for a family, because I'm wondering if I can move to Ireland with them.
It would be very scenic, very beautiful.
Very beautiful. And I would love the idea of like an American nanny in Ireland, because usually it's Irish nannies in America. Yeah. I think it would be a cute little turnaround to write a book about it.
There you go.
All right. You can
Mary Poppins would look very weird in that situation.
Very weird indeed.
She doesn't have an accent. It doesn't work.
Okay. I do think people think I have an accent.
Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago. You can leave us a review on iTunes. Oh, this is kind of a long one. This podcast rocks from DALAYNA89. Dear Friendly Atheist Podcast Team. I think that includes you, Dottie.
Nice.
I just have to express my deep appreciation for the Friendly Atheist Podcast. The insightful discussions, thought-provoking topics, and genuine camaraderie between hosts make each episode a delight to listen to. The way you navigate through sensitive issues with empathy and logic is truly commendable, creating a safe space for critical thinking and respectful dialogue. Jess, oh boy, your presence on this podcast brings warmth and perspective. Oh, making conversations even more engaging and relatable. Your insights really resonate with the audience, and it would be absolutely wonderful if you consider visiting Clarksville sometime in the future. I'm taking the last train there. Your visit would undoubtedly be a fantastic opportunity to connect with your listeners in a more personal way. I have no doubt at all. I'll be able to experience it all. Thank you for all the hard work you put into creating such a fantastic podcast. Keep up the amazing work.
Oh, thank
Here's to many enlightening episodes ahead. Warm regards, Jordan. Usually
That's
people
very
don't
sweet.
Sign it.
Thank you.
Where's Clarksville? Is that in Indiana?
Sure. You could find us. You could support the show at patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. Please do so. Leave reviews.
As a reminder, I'm going to be in Bloomington this coming Saturday, the 23rd. I'll be at the Irish Lion in Bloomington at 6:00, and then we're going to see Sarah Sherman at 9:15. And I think I have one extra ticket.
Email us if you need it. I'll just forward them to Jess.
Perfect. The bonus episode.
Yes.
My husband and I watched Doctor Strangelove,
okay,
which I hadn't seen in a minute and would love to talk about. And we also saw a movie, hopefully you've heard of because the title is wild, called The Secret Society of Magical Negroes.
Okay.
David Alan Greer is in it, and we saw it, and I just thought it was fantastic. And then you watched a documentary that you didn't tell me about.
I did, about the Nickelodeon kids shows.
Next time.
All right.
We'll see you
in
2 weeks.
And next week, we'll post that interview with Jess Piper. See you all then.
Bye.